just in the nick of time.
Oh, yeah. We're on time every time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Little free chaos.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And you can find everything about us, as soon as I fix this little microphone dealy, you can find everything about us at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got archives dating back till 2010 on all sorts of different topics. Our first hour today is school choice for military families. And our second hour is going to be the politics of white genocide in South Africa. We've been doing a little series on South Africa the last couple of weeks. So if you feel like you get into the game late, it's okay. We've got links to 3 hours of previous programming that you can
catch up.
But we're going to do the politics side today for those of you who've been following that. And our sponsor this hour.
Sponsor this hour.
Hit it, Bill.
Is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. You can find them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they're just south of Phil's Prop Shop. They've got everything you could imagine in the way of tractors and riding lawn equipment in stock and ready to go. Their phone number is 226-9226. Give them a call or catch them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Ta-da! Yeah. All right. So let's get to our guest. We have him on the line. Peter Murphy is the vice president of the Invest in Education Foundation, and he's held this position since its founding in 2012. The Invest in Education Coalition promotes school choice and improving K-12 education. But today we're talking about how this affects military families, and there's an excellent article that he had in Town Hall I've linked for you on the web, and I'm not even going to talk about it because he wrote it, so we'll let him do all the talking. Good afternoon, Peter. How's it going?
Aaron, how are you? Nice to be on. Thank you.
Yeah, I was like, well, when you're, I don't know, I guess he's your publicist or your promoter guy, Stephen Manfredi, when he got a hold of us, I was like, wait a minute, we've talked to him before.
And I guess it was tractors, too.
Yeah, and I guess it was just in April. I'm like, no wonder he sounded so familiar.
Time flies.
I know. It seems like it was a little bit longer ago.
Yeah.
So, I guess people don't really give much thought to this, but I know that with our military families moving all over the place, you know, within the country, outside the country, education, you know, when they if they have small children, is a huge issue.
That's really it. It's something that is very disruptive, and it's, you know, it's a consideration in terms of trying to retain personnel. If you have a older teenager, younger, 20-something, who joins, like my own son, for instance, you know, they can go anywhere, they're ready to conquer the world, they've got all kinds of flexibility, but they get to their late 20s, early 30s, they're starting a family. Well, now all of a sudden, there's a lot more to think about than just yourself, and you know, what about their needs? What about their disruption? How does it affect their lives? And so, if we're going to keep experienced personnel, if we're going to keep people who have years of training under their belt, who have years of experience, then we've got to do something about the needs of their families. And what we tried to do here in this particular area is offer them an educational option to draw down some money from a savings account that the Department of Education would establish in their name if they want it. And they could access funds to go to any school they want, any private school they could pay tuition with. They could homeschool if they want. Many military families, twice the rate of military families homeschool their kids compared to civilians. They could do online learning now. They could even buy specialty courses from a public school district. But the upshot being that it's just another inducement to say, well, here's something that can help with the education of your children, particularly as you move. You may want to have a consistency about your education in a private setting or whatever, homeschooling. So it's the type of thing that is long overdue, and it's just a way to address a niche need. I mean, not every military family is going to access this. It's their option. But we need to have it out there because it's sending another message that we've invested in you and we want you to stay in. and continue to defend our country.
And how much of the military budget currently is spent on this type of programs for the vets and their families? Any of it?
Well, the military budget is north of $600 billion. This is a real drop in the bucket. There is educational expenses that go into it. It's a very small number. There's about 15 or so Defense Department-operated schools that are on large military bases. There used to be a lot more, but as the country has built up over time and communities have built up around bases, and, you know, we've got 320 million people as opposed to, you know, 125 million.
Mm-hmm.
So you have communities that have built up and school districts that have formed, but there's a lot fewer of the Defense Department-operated schools, which are very expensive.
Sure.
So most military families live in a community, live in a school district, but they move around a lot, and they may end up in a district, and many do, end up in a district that doesn't meet their kids' needs, that's not suitable. And so they want something better, and this gives them a chance to access something more suitable and more higher quality.
Yeah, I would imagine that keeping up with the other students when you move around a lot in the military is a little bit more of a challenge for the military kids, isn't it?
No question about it. And, you know, there are other ways to mitigate that factor. I mean, you know, fewer deployments, fewer reassignments is one approach that's been implemented to some extent. But, you know, this is just a way. It's a very modest approach. It's, you know, maybe it's $40 million in a year. You have about the bill that's floating through that Congress right now offers up to $4,500 that a military family can access per child, and we want to get that bill passed. It's H.R. 5199. It's got over 70 co-sponsors right now.
Oh, good.
But it's tough slogging because there is pushback on this from a couple of areas, but it's really something that has to be addressed one way or the other, whether it's this particular bill, whether it's another means of doing it. But if we can get education savings accounts in the hands of military families, it's a way to address a need that they've identified. But the education of their children is important to them, and it's determinative for, you know, many of them, whether they're going to stay in the military or move on to civilian growing economy.
Right.
I was going to say, when you start looking at, you know, maybe when your kids are in elementary school, you could do some homeschooling, but when you get into junior high and high school, it's a, you know, that's a heavy lift lot of folks.
And what is the I mean, it sounds like a great program. I don't know why anybody would be against it, but what is some of the pushback you're getting from this?
Well, you start with the teacher unions.
Should have seen that one coming.
You know, I mean, it's just, they're so robotic about this. They're just, anything that smacks of choice, anything that empowers families to do something other than a public school district where they live is anathema. It's
right.
Unacceptable. And it's really too bad because, I mean, this is not the end of public education as we know it. This is not, you know, going to lead to the closure of neighborhood public schools. All the embellished rhetoric that we hear from them is just would never pan out. We're always going to have public education. We always should have public ed. And the existence of a program like this is going to affect the margins. I mean, not every military family is going to access it. They don't need to.
Right.
Most military families are going to continue with the public education of their child, and that's fine. That's their choice. That's what they want to do. But quite a few of them will. And, you know, why should anyone care except that their fear is, the teacher union's fear is not that somehow the children won't get a great education. Their fear is that they will, that they will get a better education. Their fear is that this is going to work. This is going to be effective. And then it's going to catch on. It's going to metastasize.
It's going to set some horrible precedent.
Yeah,
that's what their fear is. It's still not going to end public ed. It's not going to throw any teacher out of work or anything like that. But the unions are about expansion. More dues, more members, more control, more power.
Mm-hmm. Just, more money.
It's no different than, you know, our kindergarten days in the sandbox. I mean, it's a power game of fish that they play. And, you know, every school choice battle we've had in every state in the union comes back to that. So they are opposed to any kind of experiment, any kind of pilot program. And so we just got to fight this battle and hope that the merits pan out. And again, the irony, I can't stress enough, it's not that they're afraid it's going to be somehow detrimental to children. Their fear is it's going to work for children. The families are going to be happy with it. And that's what we've seen all over the country in the 40-plus states that have some kind of school choice program. It's been effective, it's grown, and that's what they're afraid of.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to foster any programs that work. That would be completely screwed up. We have to take a quick break, Peter, and we'll come back. We've exceeded our little time limit here. Our first little segment's pretty short. We're going to be back with our guest, Peter Murphy. He is the Vice President for Policy at the Invest in Education Foundation, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Peter, the $64,000 question. What can they do with the money? If they passed the bill and they allowed the military families to access
it, what can they do with it?
Could they use it to, say, could their kid go, I'm assuming private school, but couldn't their child also attend a public school maybe farther away, maybe has to take some sort of transportation or something like that?
Exactly. So a child could go to a non-resident public school district in another district where they could pay tuition there. Public schools charge tuition for non-residents. So that's absolutely something they could do with that. And it's usually in that range of what's offered in the education savings account. So you have that alternative. So it's not just private schools. It's another public school and maybe in a more quality district that would have higher housing values, higher home prices, and that sort of thing that maybe they can't afford on a military salary, but at least with the education savings account, they can at least get the benefits of residency by attending that school.
I don't really know how it works when you have kids on a military base. If they're on a military base, is their school always school there?
There's only about 15 operated Defense Department schools, so not every base has schools for military families.
So they could be living on a base in base housing, but be sending their kids to whatever the local neighborhood school.
Correct.
Gosh, that's got to play havoc with the classes and the. I mean, just thinking about it from the teacher standpoint, you know, you have an influx of kids, and then poof, they're gone.
Oh, I would imagine
too. One of the things that exists now is there is a funding stream for district schools called Impact Aid, and it's designed to offset the fact that, say, a military base in the community doesn't pay property tax.
Mm-hmm.
So in lieu of property taxes, you have something called impact aid that finances the cost of, in effect, it's those military families at DOD property that's paying money to that school district.
So if the school districts
are compensated for having a large military presence right now.
Okay.
That's already covered. Now, they always say it's not enough. Right? We should have more impact aid. I mean, more is not enough ever in public education, but...
Or anything else, for that matter.
There is a recognition of that problem.
Would that aid be reduced if students, say, from that base, elected to go to a different school district, would the local school district get penalized for those kids not attending their district?
Well, I wouldn't use the word penalized, because if they're not educating the child anymore, why should they get paid for doing
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yeah, that's my point. That's my, well, but that's exactly how they're going to play it.
You're cutting into
the free
money.
But their view is, we want to keep getting the money regardless of whether the child leaves or not. So, that's really what the argument's about. So you have kind of two kinds of opposition. You have the school districts that say, gee, you know, we don't touch our money. And, you know, look, my feeling is this is not a hill to die on. So find some other way to finance it. I mean, our organization's view is just, you know, get it from some other funding source. I mean, you know, you have funding sources in desk drawers in the Pentagon. I mean, it's such a vast, massive place. But then you have the other kind of opposition we talked about previously, and that's the teacher unions don't want any kind of school choice, any kind of empowerment of families that, you know, when you're not rich and you can't afford an educational alternative, they don't want those families empowered. I mean, it's so ironic, because it's the ultimate progressive policy, right? You're empowering lower income, middle class families to get better education the way wealthy people do. I mean, what's more progressive than that? And yet they're just adamantly opposed, and it's the reason it hasn't passed yet ultimately.
Yep. It's kind of like the Veterans Choice funding, so that, you know, veterans can get care outside the VA. Huge opposition.
Do we want better health care, or do we want bureaucrats to feel safe?
But the biggest opposition here?
It's just amazing this stuff goes on.
It blows my mind, but the biggest opposition is VFW, American Legion. All of the veterans groups are the ones who oppose it adamantly. And it's like, wait a second, guys, who are you advocating for?
And full disclosure, there are some veteran groups that do oppose this. And it's just this unholy alliance. And it's almost like the organizations, the interest groups themselves that purport to represent military families are more representing themselves and have their alliances with the education establishment. And, like, who are their clients? Who are they actually, whose interests are they serving here? I mean, it's a real serious question. I'm not trying to be rhetorical about it.
Well, no, but it also gets back to the same thing, even outside the military issue. If the teachers don't want kids picking a different district, then make it attractive and do a good job and make their school the principal go-to school for parents, and they wouldn't have to worry about it.
Well, theoretically, that's exactly how they should be thinking, just the way companies do, the way businesses
exactly.
do.
Exactly. Provide a better service.
But that is not the culture of public ed. I mean, and by the way, I'm not trying to paint a broad brush here. I'm not saying every educational setting or school or public setting, you know, responds that way. But the problem ultimately comes down to public education policy, which is what I'm involved in. I'm not a teacher. I've never worked in a classroom. I visited on Parents' Day and all that. That's about it. But public education policy is about the adults. It's what serves the adults' interest, not the children, which is why things like, you know, teacher evaluations, that was something that the Obama administration made a big attempt to implement around the country. I mean, it fell flat. Teachers rebelled, and they got the parents stirred up. And, you know, so the idea of evaluating teachers has really fallen away. The accountability factor is really diminished. So, you know, it's this ongoing story. It's what the adults want. It's not always what's the best interest of the children. That's what we're up against.
And military families, what kind of advocacy do they have on their own behalf?
Well, there's a number of organizations that are pushing for this, including military organizations, you know, that represent. So we have some, and the opposition has others, and right now it's at a standstill. And I think the real rub right now in Congress is the use of impact aid. I mean, we try to approach this. Congressman Banks and his bill for 5199, he's from Indiana. He's a military man himself. He tried to keep this revenue neutral, simply use an existing funding stream and allow parents to access that money. And that ended up you know, rubbing up against too many interests, and other congressmen got, you know, sort of became bedwetters about it and didn't want to go there. And, oh, some of my district people aren't going to be happy. And so a number of, not just Democrats, but Republicans as well, just said, no, I don't want to stir that pot back home. I mean, I'm with you. I'm for school choice, love military families, but let's not do it this way. So my feeling is, okay, let's do it another way. I mean, you spend more money every year, whether the bureaucracy needs it or not. You spend more money than what the administration asked for. Take some of that added spending and use it for this. I mean, I don't see what's so complicated here, but we're also folks competing against just the barrage of issues that we're trying to get done as the year draws nigh. I mean, I realize it's only June, but you know, you've got summer, August break, and then you've got
everything just takes a long time back
September,
there.
And yeah, so we're really competing against a lot of open issues right now.
But see, like if you actually look at the bill, and maybe for people who haven't read a lot of bills, this is actually a good one to cut your teeth on because it's pretty basic. But when you look at the list of the use of funds in the bill, mm-hmm. And I did link that on the page if people want to refresh and click on that. But cost of attendance at a private school or secondary school organized by the state, so public school, private online learning programs. These are things the money can be used for. Private tutoring. Mm-hmm. Now, how helpful would that be?
Special ed needs.
Yep. Let's see. Textbooks, curriculum programs, computer hardware, educational software and applications, uniforms that they might need for a private school, or some public schools have uniforms now. Fees for nationally standardized assessment exams, advanced placement tests. Now, as your kids get into high school, that becomes super important. Fees for summer education programs, educational services for therapies, including occupational, behavioral, physical, speech, language. All this stuff. This would all be useful, especially if your kids are bouncing from place to place to place. You run the risk that maybe one school was a little farther ahead, maybe one was a little farther behind. You know, tutoring, I could see, they should put that one like in bold print, because if your kids move around a lot, I could see tutoring being a big deal. We need to take another really quick break. Sorry about that. And we'll be right back with our guest, Peter Murphy. And you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. For you and me, but not for military families with children who want to send their kids up to some different school.
No, there's rules for that.
that's different. The text of this bill, Peter, this is really this is not flamethrower stuff.
It's very commonsensical. It addresses one of many areas of need in military families. It should not be overlooked. And, you know, when you have a booming economy like we're experiencing now, first time in anywhere from at least a dozen years, you have a lot of these 10 and 12 year veterans that can do just fine in the civilian labor force. I mean, they can go fly planes for the private sector. They can
make a lot more money.
They can operate technology and do any number of things in the private sector. We need to retain a quality, experienced personnel, which means we better pay attention to the needs of their families. And this is one way we do it. And again, if impact aid rubs too many people the wrong way and Congress doesn't want to touch that, fine, let's fund it some other way. There's lots of pots of money sitting around in the Pentagon and the Department of Education.
Sure.
Well, this has a real tangible need. It's going to make real impact. It's going to change. But again, that's prompted another part of the opposition that because it's going to impact so positively and it could really take off, that's their fear that, you know, we can't do that. So,
well, yeah, anything that's has the hint of reducing
some government-controlled thing.
The numbers of students
like
in their classrooms or the reduction of aid, they're not even going to look at it. They're not even going to listen to it.
Well, and
it's not about the kids.
I'm always, in the back of my mind, I'm always hearing the opposition. I have like a weird, evil voice that constantly hears chatter from the opposition back there. And so here you have, this will pay for fees for state-recognized industry certification programs, tuition for preparatory courses such as exams. It'll pay for college savings accounts. So, okay, the evil voice says, oh, yeah, they just want the money. What if they don't use it for that? Oh, wait, there's a termination clause, termination and return of funds. It terminates on the date in which the student enrolls in a public elementary school or secondary school on a full-time basis. So if they get transferred to another base and the kids are lined up with the local school and they wind up going to that, this turns off.
Which, that should.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but it isn't just free money, I guess. I mean,
no.
We should make that super clear.
Yeah, it's not welfare.
Yeah, they're not just...
it's making it available to military families. If they choose not to access it, they don't need to. And most of them, frankly, will not access it. But quite a number of them will. We're not quite sure how many will. There's really no way to predict that. But the fact that some will is enough for, you know, the establishment to have a conniption and fight back and oppose it. And so that's carried the day so far in Congress. But, you know, we're halfway through the year. There's lots of legislation still to approve. And if we can change some of the ingredients in this bill, maybe not use impact aid, maybe use some other source, maybe it'll get a new a second look.
Yeah, this is really basic legislation with some. I mean, it's not broad and vague. You know, here's their money. Parents get to figure it all out. This is really specified on. This has good. I mean, good controls on where the money's going to go, who's doing it, when it lapses, what happens if there's still money in the education savings account when the kid exits school or starts public school. It all goes back. As a taxpayer, I guess, you know, reading it as a taxpayer, I'm thinking, okay, do it. This isn't something a taxpayer would object to.
Well, not only that, but every taxpayer is invested in military personnel. If they leave early... If they leave after a few years, all the money we've invested in that person, they're not defending our country anymore. You know, there's a lot of fixed costs, there's a lot of training expenses, traveling expenses, and if they're not taking that and using that to, you know, defend the country and to continue to serve, well then that's dead weight cost. That's done. That person's vanished because they want a more stable, more predictable life for their family. So we've got to compete with that.
Right.
And this is one of many ways to compete with that, to make it worthwhile for them to continue to serve our country. And that's, look, I mean, this is about children, but it's also about military readiness, experience, and retention.
Well, that's the thing.
That's what we've got to be focused on.
Yeah,
sure.
If you want to retain good people, then, you know, you're going to have some concessions to make it easier for them to have a life.
Well, you think about it. When do most people go into the military? I mean, okay,
yeah.
This isn't everyone, but you figure about 18. If
mm-hmm.
they
right.
if they're there for 4 years, in that time period, they may have gotten married, have kids, but their kids aren't going to be school age until they've been in the military for a while. In many, many cases, well, that's the time when you're going, should we stay or should we go?
And we're trying to use this as an inducement.
Like, oh, stay. Stay. Your kids will benefit. This will be good for you. You'll get to travel and your kids' education won't suffer. And look at all the advantages.
I mean, if we had 8% unemployment, maybe the urgency would not quite be there for something like this.
Right.
Because that factor alone makes it difficult to make a billion life. But we have under 4% unemployment. There's lots of jobs out there for experienced personnel who've been trained in any number of fields. I don't mean just flying jets or shooting artillery. I mean there's
loading bombs.
The military does every range of
look at all the technical
workforce skill sets that can translate to the private sector. So,
well, just the fact that you come out of the military with some work ethic and trust me, in private sector, that alone is hard to find today.
That would be a marketable skill. Yeah, this makes a lot of sense. I don't understand how this hasn't been done in the past. I mean, do people, because you don't get to, well, I guess maybe if you're going to re-up and depending on, your MOS, depending on where you go, I guess you could sort of decide where your kids are going to grow up. But a lot of times you just get sent.
Yeah, you don't get a choice.
Right. Exactly, in terms of assignment.
Right, right.
Where you're deployed and where you're just reassigned domestically.
Interesting. And so it looks like this was introduced March of this year.
Right.
So has this bill or some version of this bill, concept maybe, has that been tried before at some point?
Well, the thing of it is, so school choice has mostly been the purview of states. So 50 states have, well, not quite 50. I mean, 40-something states have some school choice options. It's true, charter schools, education savings accounts, which this is modeled after, scholarship tax credit programs. Some cities have voucher programs. So it's traditionally been what the state legislatures and governors have done as part of their education policy. Because the military is uniquely a congressional, federal responsibility, it's put it in the lap of Congress. And Congress hasn't had a long track record of dabbling in school choice. There's some traditional view that, hey, this is a state thing and education policy is a state, yada, yada, yada. But there are things that federal government and Congress can do, particularly as it relates to overcoming opposition in states to school choice. So my home state of New York, for example, has a robust charter school program, but New York's not going to touch a education savings account policy. They're not going to touch, a scholarship tax credit that would give a K-12 scholarship funds, charitable incentives to expand and reach more families and provide better education for low-income families. That many states have resisted that kind of thing because teacher unions have an even stronger grip on state legislators, more so than they do members of Congress. So we're looking at Congress to say, hey, if this is a civil rights issue of the 21st century, if you've got persistent, 60 years after Brown versus Board of Education, you've still got, horrendous educational conditions, and particularly in urban areas, but not exclusively there, if you've still got children being robbed of a better education, well, then this, there are ways you can step in without, expanding government, without violating, the separation of powers or federalism or anything like that. Congress has a role to play. Military is an obvious way, but there's even other ways Congress can do things by, again, scholarship tax credits, using the tax code to generate charitable money to go into scholarship funds. It's, 18 states have done that. Some have done that extremely well. But there's large, large, vast areas of the country that have resisted that. California, New York, other large states.
All the states that are being super well-run.
you're right. They're not going to touch school choice. And again, if you're wealthy and you live in a nice suburban district or you live in an urban area that, you can send your kids to a private school, more power to you. But for lower middle income or working class folks, you don't have a chance. And so Congress needs to take a look at this because we have generations of children that are getting a poor education, that are ending up in prison, that are ending up in a very low quality of life. And it comes back to educating them better and addressing those needs before they become crisis.
Yeah, and let's face it, folks join the military to serve their country, but that doesn't exactly put them on the upper pay scale during that time. So why shouldn't we give them a little bit of help for serving the country? I mean, I think it's pretty simple.
Well, and this, look, I mean, if you're going to give a pay raise to military, and that happens
rarely.
That doesn't happen seldom. I mean, that's a fairly recurring thing. But, you know, that is a very expensive thing. I mean, when you're giving raises to every single person wearing uniform, that does cost money, and I'm not suggesting it's not worth it. But this is a way to actually spend a very modest amount of money. I mean, in the millions, right? Not billions, not trillions. This is a you lose this spending in rounding.
Right.
This is a rounding error.
Sure.
But it's a way to address a need that a lot of military families have without breaking the bank and without having to necessarily, you know, because not everyone's, I mean, a pay raise, no one's going to refuse that. But I tell you, you can affect the margins. You can affect those families in need by doing something very modest but significant to them.
And have a larger impact. A bigger impact than a 50-cent pay raise. I mean, this gives them the ability to make some important choices.
Well, you're also not having to move. You're not having to increase the entire cost of your household to get closer to the education for your kids. And I was just looking in your article. I remembered you had given ages, and average age of military enlistees is 27, and for officers, age 34 and a half. Well,
that's
like we were talking about before, that's right when you get kids in school.
Yeah.
We've got to take another really quick break, and then we'll finish off the hour with our guest, Peter Murphy. He is with he's the Vice President for Policy at the Invest in Education Foundation. We've got all that linked up for you at wethepeopleradio.us. Folks like me and you, so let the voice of freedom sing out through this land. This is our country. From the East Coast to the West Coast, down the Dixie Highway, back home. This is our funny stuff. All righty. So what have we not touched upon? Did we leave anything out?
Well, I think that to the extent people can reach their members of Congress,
mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, that's never a vain exercise. It's never a fruitless effort. Congress members respond to constituents, and I know it sounds a little quaint, but they really do.
Well, and you know, in you know, just by way of, you know, reminding people, there are, I don't even know how many, there are a zillion bills going on at any given time. And, you know, in the House anyway, you've got 435 people all working on different committees. So it's highly likely someone's member of Congress might not even know that this bill exists.
Well, we certainly spend our time trying to talk to everyone. And
right, but I mean, having people call and say, hey, where are you on this one? That's not a bad thing. I mean,
no, it's a great thing, and I appreciate the opportunity to tell your listeners that they should call their member of Congress. They should ask them to support H.R. 5199 and get this bill passed, get this done, do something for military, advance, you know, school choice, provide more opportunities for their families. I mean, this is a no-brainer. Like, are we going to – and just the fact that – and look, they don't need to know – you know, they don't need to know all 17 options they can use with the money.
Right, right.
In an education savings account. They can just simply say, support the military ESA bill, education savings account bill, and it's Jim – Congressman Banks from Indiana. Support that bill. Pass it.
And if they want to see what's in it, your best resource is Congress I just go to, actually, I linked it for you. Did I do the whole thing?
Right, congress.gov.
And type in H.R. Yep, 5199, and you can read the bill. You can look at the co-sponsors. You might want to do that before you call.
Yeah, I was curious. Is there bipartisan support for this? Or?
Not yet.
Not.
there really is, you know, you've got 70 plus members. I mean, it's a sad evolution that, you know, the Democratic Party, which was very pro-charter school 20 years ago. Bill Clinton was very pro-charter school as president. He made an enormous difference for good in expanding charter schools nationally with a federal role in doing so. That's really fallen away. I mean, the party today is not what it was a generation ago, and they've just taken a stance against school choice. I've seen it here in my home state of New York, where you had a lot of Democrats favor the scholarship tax credit approach in our state. And once the teachers union stepped in, I mean, that was the end of it. And, you know, in our state, we have a very strong religious school tradition in New York, serving immigrant families and Orthodox, Jewish, and Catholic. And so a lot of Democrats were very involved in that and helpful in that. But that, you know, the unions drew the line in the sand on this, and many of them have backed away from it. So it's, unfortunately, it's not been, as of late, a bipartisan effort. It's considered, you know, controversial.
That's
so
silly.
But people shouldn't accept that, you know, because again, I would stress, Aaron, that to be for school choice, to be for this bill for military families, to be for any school choice bill, is not a zero-sum game. This is not like, it's not like you're against public education just because you're for choice. You can be for both, and people are and should be for both, right? Support for one thing doesn't come at the expense of
right.
the other, or doesn't mean you're against it.
Well, heck, the kid could go to their, this is tutoring. There are all sorts of things that would enhance these students that would actually make them not only an asset to their community and give them a better future, but it would be an asset to the school that they attend. We have we also have Jacqueline on the line, and she has a question or comment for you.
Jacqueline,
go ahead.
Jacqueline,
you need to
turn your radio down just a wee bit, because we're going to be on a different time frame than your radio.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, hello. I've been calling all week for mostly the Democrats' office, trying to get them to accept school choice, because with all of these jobs we have baking right now, we do not have the students graduating who have the appropriate educational skills. And they're graduating from the inner city schools sometimes at a 50% graduation rate, which the people should know. And the Democrats want choice for abortion, but they do not want choice for schools, which is very, very strange. And a lot of these kids go to schools that are covered with graffiti. I'm a retired teacher. And you send the school to the child to the principal to get some discipline. He comes back sauntering in 2 minutes later with no discipline whatsoever. And you cannot teach lessons without discipline in your classroom. And that's what goes on in the inner city schools. So please, this sounds like a great bill. HR 5199 for the military, but we also need it for the general public. And actually, the private schools are cheaper than the public schools. A lot of the public schools are $12,000, $17,000 per student per year, where some of the private schools are only like $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 per year. And you get a much better education. There's no graffiti. The children are safe. The parents participate. They graduate sometimes at a 90% level, and they score well on all of our public education testing. So anyway, yes, definitely school choice should be the way it goes. And who is our guest speaker here? Peter who?
Peter Murphy.
Murphy. Okay, how do you get in touch with you, Peter?
You can check out our website, investineducation.org, investineducation.org. And Jacqueline, you may be a retired teacher technically, but you are still very much a teacher. We just learned a tremendous amount from your call. You're right on the money. I couldn't agree with you more. We have other legislation that we are pushing as well that would add, you know, that would provide a federal scholarship tax credit, that would provide incentives to invest in apprenticeships and skills training, just a very, you know, bring businesses more involved in investing in that, because, you know, you hit it right on the head that we're not, you know, we may be even the graduates that we're matriculating through are not necessarily college or career ready. There's a percentage
of
graduates
that really
aren't ready.
they're not able to read properly or write properly, and they do not know their math either.
Yeah.
So it's very strange that the Democrats want school choice, so they want choice for abortion, but they do not want choice for education. And I do not understand that, because it wouldn't hurt them at all. But, of course, the teachers' unions give all their money to the Democrats, and that's why it happens that way. But the teachers' unions are wrong, because they could easily get a job in a private school as well.
Yeah. Well, Jacqueline, thanks for the call, but you're a classic example of a teacher's voice is not necessarily the same voice as the teacher's union.
No,
so,
absolutely not. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you
for the
call.
Thanks, Jacqueline. Yeah, that is a good point. Sometimes, you know, everybody gets, lumped into...
Yeah, you get all sideways with the teachers, but they you know, they don't always agree with what's going on with the union, because the union, I think, takes a totally different look at the picture when the teachers are the ones in the classroom.
Well, very similar, like when I said that it's opposed by, you know, VFW, American Legion, AMVETS, those guys. That's not the guys in your local town. These are the, you know.
Yeah, this is front line.
This is the fancy hat guys back in D.C.
Teachers serve and help and educate students. Teacher unions work for adults.
Right.
I mean, the very interests are different.
And sometimes against
obviously
the
adults.
Obviously,
there's overlap in terms of compensation and bargaining for better wages and all that, which, you know, is necessary and important, okay? It's the rub that we have with teacher unions is the political activities and the political agenda. It's not bargaining for a better contract. It's not, you know, protecting against, you know, and ensuring due process and labor relations. I don't begrudge any teacher's interest and desire to have that, and the unions wanting to do those sorts of things. It's the political agenda is what we have a big problem with, and often, you know, that's what the fight's over.
Especially when
it's not unions per se. It's not traditional bargaining and and bettering them, you know, financially.
Well, it's when you start opposing good policy just because
it
doesn't suit your...
Exactly, that's where the fight is.
Yeah, that's silly. Well, I hope people will go take a look at this and, you know, pick up the phone, check with their member of the House and find out where they are in the support. Do you guys even know yet at this point if it has any support in the Senate, since that's where all good legislation goes to die?
Senator Ben Sasse and Senator Tim Scott, Ben Sasse from Nebraska, Tim Scott from South Carolina, they have a bill sponsored in the Senate side. But you know, the way the Senate is set up, it's a place where bills die. And so until the House kind of acts first and makes it a priority, you know, the Senate's just not going to look at it very, very strongly. I mean,
they don't put their neck in the news willingly.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, you know what? We very much enjoyed having you on. We always learn something new about what's going on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we always like it. We didn't talk about any tractors, but, you know, we had a lot of other things to discuss.
I'm still working.
Our guest has been Peter Murphy, the Vice President for Policy at the Invest in Education Foundation. You can find them at investineducation.org. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure we'll chat with you later on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on with us.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys, and now we're headed into a little news break. It's probably the same news we've been hearing all day and for every day. So just roll with that for 5 minutes, and we'll be back with Dr. Harry Booyens, and we're going to talk about the politics in South Africa. I guarantee you it'll be interesting. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.